Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's high noon. Good afternoon. We have Oilers stories of yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and major hockey news around the world as we do every Saturday between noon and 2. This is Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors. A star, we got a lot of stars on today. Scott Cullen from TSN. He wrote a great Oilers offseason tee-up. We'll talk about that and more. Kent Simpson has enjoyed a bird's-eye view of the Edmonton Oil Kings and their playoff run. We'll talk about that and game number 3. Benjamin Massey will be by. Always funny and articulate. We'll talk soccer and Oilers. With Ben today, and Kent Wilson will talk Flames, Oilers, Canucks, offseason, and a few things happening right now in the hockey world. We'll have Jim Byers by from Oklahoma City, play-by-play guy, teeing up his game tonight, which you can listen to via the AHL site. We'll talk about that and more. First, though, it's Al Mitchell, along with my producer today is Mark Mageau. What happened to Connor? Did he miss the bus? Or
I'm not too sure where Connor is today, okay. But it's an honor to work with you, as always, sir.
Oh, honor?
I told you, I skipped my college graduation. To work with you today.
What's up with that? I mean, is this a, like, there's girls and stuff? Or?
Well, I've learned more working with you and reading your blog than I did in 2 years of college.
You and I are going to have a long talk one day over a cup of coffee about priorities at your age.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. Okay, we've got a couple of scores to pass along. Rangers and Washington tied at 2 apiece, about a minute and a half left in the second period. And the latest score I have on the World Hockey Championships is 3-3. The Americans are flying. That Canadian team is in tough against the Americans today. We'll keep you updated on that and more throughout the day. The big story in the city of Edmonton, and this is great to see. As an old-timey guy who remembers the Edmonton Oil Kings from, well, the 60s and 70s, and then the ice from the 90s, I believe, the Edmonton Oil Kings have caught the attention of the entire city of Edmonton, and hockey fans are going nuts. Big crowds for the first two home games of the final, electrifying hockey. These kids are really good on both sides, and it's the talk of the town, as it should be. Game one was a beauty for the home team. Game two, fairly close until, I think anyway, until the bottom dropped out with a 3-goal second period for Portland. That Berchi guy should be trading for him any day if you're the Oilers, because we're going to be watching him a lot down the QE2 here in the next 10 years or so. We shouldn't be too hard on the boys for last night. That Portland club is outstanding. Berchi's a great player. They've got a lot of depth. The shot that Berchi unleashed for his first goal last night, that was ridiculous. I think it made it 3-0. We'll talk to Kent Simpson about the Oil Kings, what's in store for game number 3 when they play on the road against Portland. And, of course, they're back here for game 5. And we've got some interesting items on the ticket prices. Is a great way to get in and watch game number 5 at Rexall. We'll tell you about that as the day goes by. Oilers have a few players, as always, at the World Hockey Championships. Jordan Eberle has a goal for Canada in game number 1, and the Nuge and Devin Dubnyk are also on Team Canada this year. Jeff Petrie has scored for Team USA in game number 1 as well. Aleš Hemský has one for the Czechs, and of course, there are games on right now, and those numbers could be wrong because of the action today, but we'll keep you updated. Team Sweden did not keep Linus Omark, but did keep Fredrik Pettersson. Remember him? He was a draft from, I think, 2005, a depth draft for the Edmonton Oilers. And he ended up playing in the Swedish Elite League and doing very well. And he is in playing for Team Sweden this year, so you might be able to catch him on television. Ryan Murray, who will go high in the draft and is the first undrafted player at the World Hockey Championships for Canada in memory, played 17 minutes in game number 1, looked solid aside from a couple of wobbly moments. And we're going to talk to our guests about him today, along with some of the other guys at or near the top of the draft. Oklahoma City Barons play tonight against San Antonio. They are down 1-0 after blowing a lead, which rarely happens for the Barons, but they blew it on Thursday night. We'll talk to Jim Byers about that second period in which San Antonio scored 3 goals, and we'll do that later on in the show. We'll focus on one of the emerging talents in Oklahoma City, Tyler Pitlick, who played in Medicine Hat, also in the NCAA, and this is his third league in 3 years, and it took him a while, but he's coming on. No word from the Edmonton Oilers at all on a lot of different things. Coach Tom Rennie's future, nothing official on Steve Tambellini, but it sure looks like he's going to be getting that 2 or 3 year deal based on what we're seeing and the fact that he went to the lottery. I have a feeling we might see something happen here after the World Hockey Championships, because you're leading up to the draft and there's only a certain amount of time. The word we got, the scouts were looking at all the top end prospects. They took the trip to California to put together their list, and we'll talk about that today as well. It's going to be a tough year. This is not the Taylor versus Tyler. This is Nail versus the world at this year's draft. Going to be an interesting just to see how this wears out, because it seems to me as though we start with a list, and Bob McKenzie, of course, is the guru of this, but it does get tweaked as we get closer to the draft, and the combine has a lot to do with that as well. So, and this year, there's so many injuries. Yakupov, Galchenyuk, Grigorenko, really everybody. Morgan Riley looked fabulous for Moose Jaw once he played, but he didn't play for most of the season. So as a scout, I don't know how one of the great scouts that the Oilers have would be able to figure this out. And it's good that they've got number one, and maybe not so good too, because if you make a mistake, you're the guy who did it, right? So Rennie will find out about here sometime in the next few weeks. It's kind of interesting that things are happening in San Jose. Todd McClellan did not get a lot of support at the postseason press conferences, and that could be an indicator. And we've heard rumors that the Oilers are interested in Todd McClellan should he shake loose. So lots to talk about today. We'll keep you updated on these scores as best we can. We begin the show today by saying hello to Scott Cullen from TSN. Scott, how are you this afternoon?
I'm great. How are you today?
Very well. Lots to talk about. Let's start with the fact that these NHL playoffs are going nothing like we thought they would. Somebody asked me to pick my opening round winners. I was 4 out of 4, and I could go 0 for 4 in the second round. This is crazy.
Yeah, it's I think what it speaks to is that there isn't a huge gap between the best teams and the worst teams, and certainly the worst teams that make the playoffs, right? So you're talking the best teams and the 15th, 16th ranked teams. There just isn't a huge gap, and it's such a small gap that a team that gets, better goaltending over a short period of time, or that can make the difference, and it certainly did in several first round series, and I think that is maybe a function of the way the league is going to be from now on, is that you're not going to find a massive difference between the teams at the top and the teams in the middle.
Even a slight change, is something as slight as the Nashville situation, it seemed to put them off their game a little bit. Is there any way that, number one, Nashville can come back in that series, and number two, if they do lose the series, is there any way this will not be painted as the Russian and the Belarusian causing the Nashville team to maybe lose focus a little bit?
Well, yeah, I think that they're going to be the convenient scapegoats if they don't make the comeback, and that's I suppose probably putting too much on them for what they actually did, but at the same time, they kind of opened themselves up to the criticism by doing that and getting caught out of missing curfew. But I think what's the tough spot for the Predators is that they played most of the year without those two guys, without Kustis and without Radulov, and they were a good team. And so I understand the rationale behind you suspend them and still expect that you can win. And they did so in Game 3, but then to come back in Game 4 and still leave them out, you're leaving yourself. This is where you leave yourself open to more criticism, because everybody understood the reason why you sat them out for Game 3, but now to sit them out for Game 4, you're saying, all right, our leading scorers in the playoffs are still going to stay out of our lineup, and then when you get shut out, that comes back to bite you. So I think that this is the Predators have spent a long time under Barry Trotz and backing his methods, and I don't expect that's going to change anytime soon. But I think how this playoff series finishes is going to have some reflection on whether that's the right way or the wrong way for the Predators franchise to go.
The Canadians, by the way, tied to score at 4-4 late in the third period. Have you had a chance to watch Team Canada at the World Hockey Championships, and what's your impression of them and that impressive American team as well?
I have only caught a tiny little bit so far of the World Championships, but I always kind of like the roster that ends up over there. I mean, I know it's not Canada's best team, but it's a lot of good young guys that are still trying to kind of prove themselves and establish themselves at a certain level in the NHL. I mean, they're all guys who are NHLers, but you have a chance to go over there and play with other good players and come back to the NHL and assert yourself as definitely a scoring forward or whatever, and someone that your team can lean on a little more than you might have otherwise. And so I think it's always interesting to see who shines when they're over there, and As I heard you mentioning before, Ryan Murray is obviously one of the more interesting ones to watch, for sure.
In conversation with Scott Cullen from TSN, it's 10 minutes after noon, and we're Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors. I know it's officially the off-season for Oiler fans. When you write that Edmonton Oiler piece in your TSN column about the off-season, my hope, Scott, is one day I'd like you to write that in June, if you would, because I know you start at 30 and work backwards.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the goal that I have, is that you know, we'll have this conversation one year in June. It's an interesting piece, though, and I like how you break it down with the efficiencies and, you know, who did well and who is a free agent and what they might want to look for. And I think you brought up some interesting things for Oiler fans, and so it's very timely that we're talking about it. What should Oiler fans look for in terms of improvement this summer? Is it mostly defense, or do you think they have needs elsewhere?
Well, I think there are needs elsewhere, but I think the glaring need is on defense. And I'm not sure that the Oilers' defense is quite as bad as it's been painted. I know pretty much everybody seems to think that, well, there's no point in them taking Nyla Yakupov at the top, that they, you know, trade down, get a defenseman, you know, trade for another defenseman, do whatever you can to bolster the blue line. And I'm not sure that that's necessarily the path they have to take, because I do think there are some guys who, are part of the future on that Oilers defense. I mean, I think Ladislav Schmid has made nice progress over the years, and I thought Jeff Petrie had a really nice year last year. Those are a couple that are certainly going to be kind of cornerstone pieces going forward. And, you know, what you get out of the veterans, I'm sure, is going to be the real determining factor next year. And, you know, Ryan Whitney, whether he can stay healthy, or Andy Sutton, whether he can not be suspended. And Nick Schultz, you know, is he going to be a steadying influence? If any of these guys, come back and have good years next year, that the Oilers' defense isn't necessarily disastrous. At the same time, it is an area that they can upgrade, and I think, whether they use their first-round pick on it or not, it's still something that they can choose to address this summer, because say they decide that they're going to pick Yakupov or whoever else at the top of the draft, they have other assets that they can move if need be. There are enough young prospects in the Oilers system that they can afford to move one if it's going to help upgrade their blue line.
When they won the lottery, Steve Tambellini and then later in the next week, Kevin Lowe both talked about the possibility of trading the pick and suggested that they'd have to be overwhelmed in order to move it, because you obviously, can pick the guy you want. However, there's a lot of interesting teams like the Habs and the Islanders and even Columbus and Toronto at number five. Do you think there's a possibility that pick gets moved, at least to move down two or three spots?
Well, and I think it's possible, because if you subscribe to the idea that the Oilers have enough up front, they've certainly done well in the draft in recent years, getting high-end talent up front. So if you subscribe to that, the idea that they're going to be okay in terms of scoring, that, you know, and that their real need is to get a defenseman, and, depending on what the price is paid to move down, say, from 1-4 or 1-5, 1-6, whatever team is anxious to move up and take, and presumably it's Yakupov that they would trade up to take. But you never know what you might be able to extract from them in order to make that move. And if you do make that move, there's still going to be a quality defenseman available, in the 4, 5, 6 spot, because the top 10 is kind of overrun by defensemen this year. It's the way the draft class is looking. There aren't a ton of high-end scorers. It's going to be a lot more guys on the blue line. And if the Oilers want to, really change the look of their defense, maybe the trade down is a way to do it.
We hear at every draft that teams should take the best player available, and certainly the Oilers, have done that. You could definitely say in 08 getting Eberle, and obviously in 10 with Hall, and then the Nuge, they've done a good job. But at some point in time, even if you do agree that taking the best player available is the right thing, don't you sometimes, if you take three or four in a row that are forwards, you run a little danger of becoming like the French in World War II, where you've got all your cannons pointed in one direction and nobody's there to stop the ground forces from coming in? Is that maybe something that would reach a tipping point this summer for the Oilers? They passed on Larson. They passed on some very fine defensemen in 09 to take Pajarvi. At some point, is it defensible, do you think, for the Oilers to go ahead and take that defenseman, even if it is number one overall?
Well, that's a tough call. I mean, I would say no. I would say you take Yakupov, and if you're going to stay at number one, and then look to address your defense elsewhere, and particularly because it's not easy to just insert a young defenseman into the lineup. I mean, a guy like Larson, who had a fine rookie season, ended up being a healthy scratch for a couple weeks down the stretch and early in the playoffs. And, he's been capable. He certainly stepped in and played just fine for the Devils when they finally put him back in. But, it's not exactly smooth sailing when you drop an 18-year-old on the blue line and say, go ahead and make this team better. So in some ways I understand the way some teams work is that they almost avoid drafting defensemen that high in the draft because it usually takes a few years before they're really ready to make an impact. And you'd rather get your impact. I mean, if you can get a forward there, he can probably make an impact fairly quickly. I mean, I think the Oilers fans have certainly seen that. Nugent Hopkins and Hall have, it takes them weeks before they're suddenly impact players in the NHL. So I think I don't know that it's a tipping point this year that they absolutely have to take a defenseman, but I think if they're going to decide that it's a defenseman, I think the smart move is to trade down to do it and acquire other assets in the package.
Tom Rennie is still hanging out there without a contract, and I think Oilers fans are maybe along with the organization wondering about who might shake loose this summer. Some interesting things happening this week with Todd McClellan and in Vancouver with Alain Vigneault, but I think that the idea that Vigneault is going to go anywhere aside from Vancouver is somewhat ridiculous. Do you think there's going to be a lot of movement among coaches as well as obviously players this summer? Is this a year where a lot of teams might end up changing the lead man?
I think you could see a few teams doing that, and then obviously the McClellan situation does seem to sort of hang out there because San Jose gives a nice vote of confidence to Doug Wilson, and there was no ensuing paragraph talking about that Tom McClellan is on such sturdy footing himself. And so, yeah, I can see that, and McClellan certainly because of the Sharks have played pretty well over the last few years and experienced some success, if not, ultimate success in the postseason, that, you can see that he would be an attractive candidate for several teams, Oilers included. So, and it's, with the Oilers kind of leaving Rennie hanging right now, it seems quite obvious that they're hoping to find a better option out there, and that this could be an opportunity to make a change that you don't really have to you don't have to sacrifice anything off your roster. This is just a way to kind of change the direction of the club, and it works for some teams, and doing it in the offseason this year is probably not the worst idea.
Scott, thanks so much for this. We appreciate it very much.
Hey, anytime. Thank you.
All right. Scott Cullen from TSN. If you don't read his column, make sure you do. And he writes so many of them that I think it's on page 2 of his byline that the Oiler item comes up. And it's really good stuff. The great thing I like about what Scott does is that, he's not a, he does all 30 teams. So he just puts it out there and really talks very frankly about what the needs are, what might happen. And he has all the elements there. And it's a really nice starting point for the summer. And there's so many things that could happen for the Edmonton Oilers this summer. So really nice insight from Scott Cullen at TSN. So we recommend that to you. Now, we got a busy show, so I don't want to take too long here teeing up the next item. We've got Corey Graham on the way. We're going to talk about the Edmonton Oil Kings. They lost last night. Their tremendous run in the playoffs and what Oil King fans can look forward to for Game 3 and then back again for Game 5. We'll take a break. We're back next. This is Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
This is Nation Radio on a very busy Saturday afternoon for hockey. Canada losing to the United States in overtime at the World Hockey Championships. Jack Johnson scoring in OT as the USA beat Canada 5-4. Duncan Keith scored for Canada late in the third period to tie the game at 4 apiece after Nate Thompson had scored earlier in the third to give the Americans a 4-3 lead. Evander Kane, Patrick Dwyer also scored earlier in the third. Johnson scored to tie things up at 2-2 in the third after Jeff Skinner had scored earlier in the second to give Canada a 2-1 lead. And Jim Slater and John Tavares had scored to make it 1 apiece in the first period. So what I noticed, and I didn't watch the whole game, was that the Americans are fast, and they're big, and they're strong, and they're good. And the Canadians were, I think they were outplayed, what I saw. Can't comment for the whole game, but you know what? I think this might be one of those very interesting World Hockey Championships based on how the Americans played. Oilers, this is from Jamie Bates saying, Oilers first third Omark to Columbus for their first second and Tootin. Book it. All right, well. I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities. There's all kinds of possibilities. And you know what? The great thing about having the first overall pick 3 years in a row is that it gives us lots to talk about between now and then. But the Edmonton Oilers, I think under Stu McGregor, have proven that, you know, you can at some level trust them to make the right decision. Certainly going back to Jordan Eberle, as an Oiler fan, I don't think we have a lot to complain about over the last four drafts, based on the, and I know they've been drafting first overall a couple of times and another one to come, but with guys like Jordan Eberle also being added to the mix of fine work being done by the Edmonton Oilers scouts. That's just my opinion. 12:27 now, joined by Corey Graham, Oil Kings play-by-play guy. Corey, exciting game again last night.
Yeah, it was, Alan. You know, the Oil Kings had their chances to get back in the game. Portland, though, you know, giving full credit for the victory. And so far, it's been exciting hockey. It's been fast-paced, up-tempo, like we thought this final would be.
Well, the thing about the Portland Winterhawks is they're a team that has experience in the dub. They've been here before. They were in the finals last year. And it looked to me like they were just not going to be denied last night.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of that. I thought Matt Caruth was very good in goal, you know, stopped some early opportunities for Edmonton, although, you know, and Portland's big gunners, Sven Berge obviously chipping in a couple goals, and Brandon Leipzig's been really good in this series for the Winterhawks as well. So, you know, I think there's a little bit of that, and we'll see how that transfers back here down in Portland now. Both teams have landed here this morning, and we'll see if Edmonton can kind of match that intensity or that desperation a little bit coming up tomorrow night.
So you're in Portland now, right?
Yeah, we just actually got off the bus here at the hotel and just walking over to the rink right now.
So good. I'm going to make you late and out of breath. It's all good.
That's all right.
The city of Edmonton is really getting behind this team. They've always been Oil Kings fans and good attendance, but you can really feel it, can't you, Corey? This city of Edmonton is really getting behind the Oil Kings.
Yeah, absolutely. It was good to see 10,000 people at the building last night for sure. And, you know, hopefully we see more of that in game number 5 coming up this series as well. And, you know, it's been good to hear the buzz around town. You know, a lot of the media is buying in. There's cameras down there all the time. And I know the kids are enjoying all the attention they're getting from the media and from the fans as well. I think it's been a lot of fun here as this ride continues on. And, you know, now they're in the finals. And like I said, whatever happens down here, they're going to have another game back in Edmonton on Thursday. And that should be pretty exciting.
Corey, you've seen the team all year, and over the last, say, 4 or 5 weeks, which players for you have really stepped up late in the season and now into the playoffs and made themselves a bigger part of the team than maybe they were earlier in the year?
Well, I think, I mean, definitely you got to look at the line that's been together for most of these playoffs between Curtis Lazar, Henrik Samuelsson, Stefan Legault. Those three guys have really come to the forefront up front for the Oil Kings, you know, been the offensive leaders for this club. I mean, Henrik's just so strong down low that other teams are having trouble trying to deal with him. And, you know, on the back end, Martin Gernat's really stepped up offensively. He's had some great pinches and reads and been able to chip in with some points here. I mean, he had a really good season to begin with, but just as we got to, I guess, the later the third round on to the finals here, Marty's really sort of brought his game up to yet another level, so offensively at least. And, of course, I mean, all the usual guys we talk about, Mark Pesek's been great defensively with Keegan Lowe, and, you know, Griffin Reinhart's really sort of asserted himself defensively as well. But I obviously up front, everybody, Samuelsson, Lazar, and Legault, that line, when they were together, they were split up last game in the third period, but they were just so good together, and they've really generated the most of the offense for the Oil Kings so far.
The thing about Gernat that intrigues me is he had the size and he had the wheels, and he plays with a little more edge than I think people think that he has. But if he has that offensive ability, you mentioned pinching in and using his brain and making really good decisions, this is a guy who was a fourth or fifth rounder. The Oilers may have gotten lightning in a bottle with this guy.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Alan. I think you're right. And, you know, I know they got him in the fifth round, but I've talked to a lot of scouts that had him ranked higher than that. And, you know, I don't know if a lot of other teams knew about Martin Gernat when the Oilers picked him. And they got, looks like they may have got a steal. You know, he had great numbers this year in the regular season with the Oil Kings. And, you know, it jumping up offensively early, you know, maybe tailed off a little bit in the middle of the year, then came back on late in the season. But during these playoffs, He's been great using his stick with that long reach and generating chances offensively, picking up that goal in game number one as well by just a great read coming down the middle of the ice.
The Oil Kings have had such a great run, Corey, and last night was, you know, one of the few times in the last, I don't know, couple of months where they really, you know, the bottom fell out with the second period and they struggled. Is it important for the coaching staff to get to these kids and say, look, you know, it was one game, don't worry about it, we got to get right back on the horse, and game three is more important, that's what we look at?
Yeah, I think absolutely. Obviously, you know, you know this wasn't going to be a sweep either way. And, you know, you're right. They got beat pretty good at home. Although, you know, that game two was very interesting. There was a goal that was called back against Edmonton that the WHL after the game admitted they screwed up on a replay and it should have been a goal and that would have made it 3-1. And maybe momentum turned a little bit there, but it's going to be big for this club to come on the road, come to Portland, the Rose Garden, for what we hear is going to be sold out tomorrow night. So it's going to be a hostile atmosphere. And it's going to be interesting to see how the Oil Kings deal with the fans down here, because it's a lot different playing down in the States than it is in Edmonton. It's just the fans are all over you. They're really loud, and it's going to be an awesome environment here, and hopefully the Oil Kings can sort of deal with that early.
Portland is a team that's been a favorite all year long, Corey, because of their depth and the quality and the fact that they were so close last year. This year's final, somewhat similar to last year, except Portland's in the position that Kootenay was a year ago, where they lost game one and then won big in game two, and then went on to really play well and finish off Portland. Do you think there's a danger there with such a young team? And let's face it, the Oil Kings are a young team. Do you think there's a danger there if game three gets out of their hands that they that this thing could turn down for them very quickly?
I guess so, but I'll be honest with you, the Oil Kings, they've been so good after a loss. They haven't lost back-to-back games since in regulation, I guess, since early October, and without regulation since November. They've just been so good dealing with losses when they popped up. So it's tough for me to pick them losing three games in a row here. But hey, this Portland team, like you said, take nothing away from them. They are unbelievable firepower up front. They've been here before. They know what it takes. So with a young team, I think so. But there's still enough veteran leadership on this squad, and they know what they did winning 50 games this year, that I don't think that's going to be a problem.
Okay, now your schedule is to get to the rink now and then game tomorrow, right?
Yeah, game tomorrow. It's 7:00 Edmonton time, and then a game on Tuesday night at, when you do the math, I believe that would be 8:00 Edmonton time. No, 6:00 Edmonton time. I can't do math.
8:00 Edmonton time? Yeah, it's 8:00
Edmonton. Yeah, 7:00 here. Yeah, it'd be 8:00 there.
Tell Simpson to carry your bags while you're walking, buddy, because they should be doing something. You've carried them all year.
Yeah, I don't know where Simmer is. He's at the hotel. I texted him coming to the rink. I have no idea where he went. So he's probably already in the bar by now.
He probably got a limo from, you know him. He's, you know, he lives high like that. Hey, Corey, thanks so much.
Sales guys, eh?
Corey, thanks a lot, much, and have a great day. We'll tune in tomorrow for sure.
All right, Alan, anytime, bud.
All right, that's Corey Graham. And you know what? Pretty exciting times. You know, the Edmonton Oil Kings are, I would think, a year ahead of what anybody would have expected, because they're still very young. You know, you've got Lazar, who's a emerging talent, but he's a year away from his draft. And they've got a terrific defense. They've done a great job bringing in Samuelson. That was their deadline move, and some really good decisions. And they've got themselves in a great spot in very short period of time for an expansion team. And good on them for doing that. By the way, did you know that old guys like me can always bring up facts that we find interesting? So don't nod off, because I think this is a good one. Do you know that the Edmonton Oil Kings from the 60s were the team that moved to Portland in 76-77? If you remember Wayne Babich and Tony Curry, that was the final edition. Obviously, they had Phil Russell. They had great teams through the 60s and 70s. Some of those guys are still working here in town. And one of the great legacies in Western Hockey League lore are the Edmonton Oil Kings. But they moved to Portland way back when I was a younger man. All right, 12:35. And we wanted to, Corey brought it up, and earlier in the day, the boys from Coming Down the Pipe had an interview just talking about that goal that was waved off, and we don't want to call it a blown call, but it clearly afterwards was the WHL came out, and good that they did, and said, you know what, that goal should have counted. And just got to play a little bit of what we heard this morning about that specific goal.
Sure. I think it's real important that we walk through what went on. There was 6:11 left in the second period. We had to play at the net to scramble. The puck ends inside the net, and it was difficult to tell exactly how that puck had gone into the net. So the referee thought it had gone underneath the net. He made the decision on the ice like it's expected of him, and he was confident that he had seen the puck go in. In fact, there was two players from Edmonton standing right there who did not react either. So I think the same reaction was by everybody around the net, that the puck had not gone in the correct way. The video goal judge did the right thing. He called down, just indicating that he wanted to take a look to see what had happened. Mm-hmm. And they actually took a look at two replays. One was the original play of what had gone on, and that play was not conclusive because of the player traffic around there as to what had happened. So they went to the backup replay, which was the overhead camera. Again, with the overhead camera, it wasn't conclusive as to how it had gone in. So then they made the decision that they'd have to go with the on-ice referee's decision, which is the process that we follow, to indicate that inconclusive means follow the on-ice decision, which was no goal. They were not aware at that time that there was another angle showing that the puck actually had hit the black pants of the goaltender, gone in through the side of the net. And by the time that video was seen by the video replay booth, the play had already resumed. And in that circumstance, they're not able to stop the play or go back. And the circumstances, unfortunately, the puck was in the net, and we just were not aware, the video goal judges weren't aware, that there was another angle to indicate that that puck was actually inside the net.
Where was the other angle from?
The other side of the ice.
No, was it from like the in-house or the Shaw?
Oh, it's the Shaw feed that's up there. So the original angle that the guys were looking at in the video booth was the actual Shaw feed. And I think what happens is the players are around the net. The puck actually ends up, I think, on the back of the net. The goaltender goes to freeze it, and then the net tips forward. And that's why I don't think any of the players even reacted to think that there might be a goal. So the other angle, though, was from the other side of the ice, and that was the view that showed the puck in.
So the end result is we know now it's a goal, but too late because play had resumed.
Well, we do have a process in place that says if we're going to have a video review, it has to be concluded prior to the resumption of play. And because they had looked at two angles already, unaware that there was a third angle, neither of which were conclusive to give them a different opinion than the referee on the ice, play resumed, and then by the time the other angle was available to them, it just they couldn't go back. So,
but the third angle, good goal.
In my opinion, yes.
That's Director of Officiating for WHL, Kevin Minch. Our thanks to the Pipeline guys for allowing us to use that, because they had it on their show this morning. And obviously very interesting. And you know, you never know, but it might have changed the outcome of the game. And it is a huge deal. And I always wonder, you know, respect to the WHL for passing that along. But they do seem to be really quick decisions. And I know that they want to do that. And, you know, you don't want to have a 10-minute delay while they look at every angle. And these things are going to happen. But one thing I want to make really clear is that I think the WHL did a really good job of bringing Mr. Minch out there and, you know, basically explaining it to the media so that they could pass it along to everybody. What happened, what the decision was, it was a mistake. They admitted that too. But then they gave you an idea about why it happened. And I think that most people, most fans would say, okay, you know what? Everybody makes mistakes. It wasn't like they deliberately, you know, robbed Edmonton of a goal, and that's life. So, you know what? I hats off to them. I think that was a really good way of doing it. And, you know, the only thing that you could ever do beyond that is to go back and play it after that. And you can't really do that. I mean, that's like the pine tar incident with Kansas City, and I think the Yankees 1,000 years ago. That sort of thing can occur in baseball because you can just, you know, say, okay, well, batter up. But in hockey, I mean, everything's changed. The teams are in Portland now, and it's tied at one apiece, and that's the way it is. A couple of things here from sending texts to 1012-60. This passed along. Hey guys, any word or idea about the Oilers signing Brandon Davidson? I don't know much about Blaine as well. Both of them are obviously eligible to be signed by the Edmonton Oilers before the draft. And the Oilers have a problem with the 50-man list moving forward. Likely is, I would think one would be signed and one maybe not signed. That'd be my guess. And there's obviously a possibility of a trade before they have to go. Davidson can't go back into the draft. He can sign as a free agent afterwards because he was a 20-year-old in the WHL this past year. It's going to be interesting. The Oilers have done such a good job drafting everybody. Now, of course, they've got to sign them and make sure they've got a competitive AHL team. And we'll talk to Jim Byers about that and more in the next hour. We also have Kent Wilson on the way from Nations. He's the overlord of all the Nations site. And Benjamin Massey, looking forward to talking to you. He's a Copper and Blue reporter. He also does items on soccer for 86 Forever and was talking about FC Edmonton in the past week and was here for the game at Commonwealth. So we'll pick his brain about two sports, and that'll happen in the next half hour. Now, on the way, we're going to talk about the top 10 for this year's draft and about why the Edmonton Oilers, I think they're likely going to have to make a decision between Neil Yakupov and trading down and taking one of two or three defensemen available at maybe five or six. Those will be the two decisions that they have to make. And we'll try to figure it out together why they would maybe take Yakupov at number one and why maybe, based on need, they would trade down. It's 12:41. We're going to take a break. This is Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
About 8 minutes left in the Ranger-Washington game. It's tied at two apiece with the Rangers up 2-1 in the series. Huge game in that series. I'm a little bummed there's no Saturday night hockey. Am I the only one? I know there's other sports and whatever, but it does it feel to you as though, Mark, that you know there should be hockey on tonight?
Oh, of course it should be. It's Saturday night. There was only how many more Saturdays of the NHL season do we have?
Not many.
And you would hope for at least one game. But instead, thanks to NBC, we're treated. This has been a pretty good game, this
sure.
Capitals Rangers game. But it started at 10:30 Mountain Time.
I know, and it's like it's a joke. And what it means at my house is I'm going to have to watch a movie or something, and talk to people and all this other stuff. And no, I'm just teasing. But you know what? For Canada, not having a Saturday afternoon game when you're out in Canada, you do stuff in the afternoon, and then Saturday night you have your water or whatever you're going to drink, and you watch your game or two. So thanks, Gary. That's all I'm saying. I'm not upset or anything, but I'm really upset.
I'm just hoping this game goes to about nine overtimes. Yeah. That's the only way it could work out.
Well, with the Kentucky Derby canceled, it could go nine overtimes and I'd be happy because I'd get to watch the good part of the game anyway. It looks like it's a really barn burner anyway. Canada lost 5-4 in overtime against a pretty strong looking American club. Cam Ward in goal for Team Canada, and 1:47 in overtime, Jack Johnson scored to make the score 5-4 for the Americans. So it looked tough. I watched the early part of the game, and man, those Americans look good. They're big, and are they fast this year? I think we're going to be talking a lot about them as the World Hockey Championships move along. Wanted to talk about the top of the draft this year, Oilers picking number one, and the fact that if you take Neil Yakupov, the possibility exists that Steve Tambolini is going to have to trade one of the big three, or then it would be big four, to get balance on the roster. And there are other ways to do it. You can maybe trade a Sam Gagne or sign a free agent, or back in the olden days, they'd get, you know, Charlie Huddy signed, and, you know, he'd coach him up a little bit in Houston and he'd come up. But the Oilers cluster now, Taylor Hall was drafted in 2010, you know, and Nuge has a year's experience, and Eberle was drafted in 2008. So this is a group of forwards that is moving along now, and the defense is behind. And I mentioned with Scott Cullen, it's almost like the French in World War II, where they had the cannons pointed out and nothing behind. And at some point in time, it probably behooves the Oilers to either draft a defenseman, trade down and draft a defenseman, or think about, please don't send hate mail, but at some point, Hall, Nuge, Eberle, Yakupov, that's going to be a great group up front, but the defense is maybe going to be left a little bit behind, and then you're really counting on Klefbom and Gernat and Marinson and all of those other guys all working out and joining Smead and Petrie and the guys that are in the pipe right now. So at some level, the Edmonton Oilers are going to have to make a huge decision this year, and in the interest of balance, if you take Yakupov and you want Yakupov at drafted number one, that might come with a bitter pill down the line, because I mean, I can't imagine the Edmonton Oilers ever trading Eberle, Nuge, or Hall. So it's going to be interesting. But the top 10 right now for me are Yakupov at number one. He's an exceptional talent. He's an offensive player. His we've talked about NHL equivalencies on Gabe Desjardins before, but before his knee injury, he was a guy that I had, I felt was going to be, you know, Taylor Hall-ish, and he was actually, you know, projecting beyond Taylor Hall as far as his equivalencies are concerned. Now, that he may just be a one-dimensional sniper, but what a skill. And Yakupov, math tells us, is the best guy in the draft. And so does Bob McKenzie and Redline Report and Craig Button. It's the only thing everybody agrees on this year is that Yakupov is number one. I have Ryan Murray at number two because, well, a lot of reasons. He's a more complete defenseman. A lot of people are down on his offense, but if you look at the amount of offense he supplied on a pretty poor offensive team in Everett, Murray is you know, he's got a lot more offensive flair than people are giving him credit for. My blog the other day, somebody compared him to Scott Niedermeyer. Niedermeyer, the year that he came out in, I think 1991, his team scored 385 goals. Murray's team, in a complete season, scored 185. Murray was a part of 46 games, and I think he had 31 points. So you can't make a comparison across eras like that and have it be anything reasonable. Dumba is the best offensive defenseman in the draft. Murray has a defensive side, that makes him more valuable, in my opinion. And even if he ends up being Chris Phillips plus a little bit, it's an interesting player for the Oilers to at least look at. And if the Oilers make a trade down and they end up drafting Ryan Murray, I'm okay with that. I think Stu McGregor has a great handle on the draft, and there are things we don't know about. Injuries, Yakupov's knee problem, we don't know how bad it is. We'll know that the Oilers will know, and all the other NHL teams by the time the draft comes along after the combine. But these are questions we don't have an answer to. So I've got Yakupov number one, Murray number two, Alex Galchenyuk, Russian impact forward. He's born in Milwaukee. He had knee surgery, kept him playing all but the final six games this year. But his 16-year-old season was outstanding. And I think Galchenyuk is going to move up the charts here. It's already, Jason Greger wrote a great article on Oilers Nation not long ago, this week sometime, about Galchenyuk and maybe getting a little bit of attention there. I think he's a guy who could go a lot higher than people think maybe he will. Grigorenko, I have at number four, big center, nice range of skills, and he's falling a little bit, and I think it's, there's this, line of thought about, you know, maybe him being a little bit indifferent, and that sometimes comes along and it's warranted and sometimes not, but he's still an outstanding skill player. I just think other people have passed him maybe, and number four overall isn't bad. I have Morgan Riley at number four. If you saw any of the Moose Jaw series, this is a guy who is, I mean, he can really skate, and he's smart offensively. He's a good defenseman. I don't think he's Ryan Murray's equal in that area. But Morgan Riley might end up being the best defenseman overall taken in this draft based on his foot speed and his creativity offensively, along with the fact that he can play defense. So his injury really cost him, I think. I have Griffin Reinhardt at number six. I've seen him a lot, so maybe that's why. But he's a big, tough defenseman. And I have a feeling if the Oilers do trade down, that Griffin Reinhardt might be a guy that they really are high on. If we see at the draft that they trade from 1 to 5 or 1 to 7, then that might be the guy they're looking at. Just based on what we've seen, the fact that we you know, have heard from different various scouts that he had a great second half and obviously has a chance to showcase his skills in the postseason, which he's doing now. Maybe a tough night last night, but I think Griffin Reinhardt is a guy who's going to surprise his final number. Matt Dumba, I have at number 7. What a great talent. And the things that maybe hurt him, Craig Button is very high on Matt Dumba. The areas that I think would be a concern are he's a little chaotic. He goes for the big hit, maybe doesn't stay in his zone, his lane as much. But offensively, a guy who can come back and impact the offense, maybe right away at the NHL. I think Dumba's a guy who a little bit like PK Subban. If he was maybe physically bigger, he's a guy that I can see Edmonton going for. I don't think they will. Philip Forsberg out of Sweden, I have at number 8. Good size, plus shot, kind of a power forward type. He's playing in the second tier Swedish league, which is very difficult for us to project him through math as to how much he'll be offensively, but as a player and as a guy who can, you know, impact the game physically, Philip Forsberg is getting a lot of attention, and I have a number 8. Pontus Åberg is the guy I'd have at 9. He's a speedy winger, has been playing and posting good numbers in the Swedish Elite League, which tells you that, you know, he's more man than boy if he can play at that level, and he's a guy who's getting a lot of attention. We had Corey Pronman on 2 weeks ago, I believe it was, and he was very high on him as well. And Radek Faksaev at number 10, a power forward from Europe and a guy we should pay attention to. Now, the one thing we know from years and years and years of doing these, whether you want to call them mock drafts or projections or following Bob McKenzie's top 10s, there's a lot that's going to happen between now and then, the draft day, that we have to follow. The combine list came out this past week. The Oilers always end up drafting five or six of these guys off the combine list. So that's something to pay attention to. The actual NHL combine, we're going to find a lot of information about these injuries. A guy like Yakupov will have had quite a bit of time to recover from that injury. He didn't look as effective after he came back as he had been previously. Is he recovered? How strong is his knee? Those things will be a little bit answered. I think there's so many things about this year's draft that we don't know that saying absolutely Edmonton is going to take Yakupov at number one or saying that they're going to trade down to three or five, it's still out there in the ether somewhere. And we'll know, but we don't know yet. So that's my top 10. You can go to the Low Tide blog and check out some other top 10s from Bob McKenzie and Craig Button and also Redline Report. And there's some links there to read the latest on. If you follow the draft, if you're not up to snuff yet, that's a good place to start as any, because it's happening. You know what? It's already May. It doesn't take long sitting around talking about the draft, and I'm looking forward to the Team 1260's coverage. I don't know too much about what we're doing this year, but I do know it's going to be the best ever, so stay tuned for that right here on Team 1260. Now, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour. Coming up in the next hour, Jim Byers from Oklahoma City, play-by-play guy, teeing up for the big game tonight, game number two against San Antonio with the Barons down 0-1. Kent Wilson from Flames Nation will join us to talk about the Flames and their big signing this week, and he also wrote a great article on Flames Nation about what to look for in hockey players as opposed to athletes or height and all that stuff. And we'll have Benjamin Massey before 2 o'clock today on Nation Radio. We're brought to you by Edmonton Motors. We'll be back right after this.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
A couple of minutes after 1 o'clock, we've got Jim Byers, Oklahoma City Barons play-by-play guy, Kent Wilson, and also Benjamin Massey before 2 o'clock today. And we're just counting down to the end of a pretty exciting game. Washington up now 3-2 on a Mike Green goal with about 12 or 14 seconds left in that game. That's a crazy series. You know, the NHL playoffs this year, you know, usually I have a decent handle on, and I'm not bragging, but I usually do. It's been off the rails. And actually, Scott Cullen mentioned it last hour about the fact that there's so much is basically even. These teams are all fairly even. And for L.A. to be up where they are, and for Nashville to be down the way they are, and now the Rangers, who look, I mean, that defense looks like the best defense in the NHL to me, and they got a rock solid goaltending, and they're 6 seconds away from being tied at 2-2 in that series. And then, of course, you've got the other series as well, New Jersey, Philadelphia. It's been a wild, just a wild, wonderful playoff season. So, Team Canada, by the way, lost in overtime. Jack Johnson scoring the goal to make it 5-4, and Washington, by the way, just won, make it 5-4 for the Americans in a pretty exciting game as well earlier today. The Kentucky Derby has been canceled, and there's no Saturday night hockey game. Well, actually, there is. And is that Jim? We're going to talk to Jim Byers right now from Oklahoma City Barons, play-by-play guy. Jim, it looks like they're going to have a lot of listeners from Edmonton tonight because there's no Hockey Night in Canada game. The Kentucky Derby's been canceled, and so you're it, buddy. You're going to be number one on the list.
Well, that's good. You know, it's been an interesting start to the series so far. I think we expected a low-scoring series against San Antonio. Instead, we got a 6-4 game in Game 1, and who knows what will happen tonight, I guess.
Well, the interesting thing for me, observing the Barons for 2 years now, I don't recall a game where the floodgates opened quite that much. They were up 3-1, and then a lot of things happened, and they ended up losing the game. It's a rare occurrence for the Barons to lose a game like that.
It really is. It was the first game all year, regular season and playoffs, that they lost when they had a lead at an intermission. They led at the first intermission 2-1, and they had zeros in the loss column when leading both after one period and two periods all year and into the playoffs. They had that 3-1 lead early in the second. Then they had a 4-2 lead a couple of minutes later, still in the early portion of the second period. And when this team gets a lead like that this season, it's pretty much been in lockdown mode. But the Rampage are a tough team. They keep coming at you. You really wonder how San Antonio does it. They don't at least in the regular season, have particularly good special teams statistically. And their power play has been great in the playoffs, but they're one of those teams that's greater than the sum of their parts. And to a degree, the Barons are that way, too.
I know that Colton Tubert is out, and you know, for the foreseeable future anyway, and we never want to use injury as an excuse. Both sides obviously have them. But how much have injuries impacted the Barons, especially on the blue line?
Well, they have impacted a little bit. You know, the first series, the Barons were without Taylor Charney, who's a very good player at this level. And now in this series, the Barons are going to be without Colton Tubert. We don't know exactly how long he's going to be out, but he did have some surgery after taking a puck in the face the last game of the previous series against Houston. So he's going to be out for a few weeks. And certainly if the Barons had both of those guys, they'd be a little stronger. But by and large, the Barons are healthy. They had 8 full days off in between series to rest guys up. And some guys, I understand, were a little sick after that first series. Something was going around. So that should be all gone. And then really, both teams are reasonably healthy. But, you know, there's no question losing a guy like Tubert from a physical standpoint, in addition to his playing ability, certainly doesn't help.
Hunter Tremblay, he's got to write a book about his penalty killing, because he clearly knows something the rest of the world doesn't know. He's got another goal shorthanded in the postseason.
Yeah, he tied for the league lead in the regular season with 5 shorthanded goals. He got one in the Houston series in one of the games in Houston, and it was a big one, too, because the game was a little bit close at that stage when he scored the shorthander, and that opened up, I think, went from a 2-goal lead to a 3-goal lead, and the Barons pretty much dominated those first 2 games of the previous series down in Houston, and he helped put that one away. And Hunter has been a very good penalty killer. He's, you know, when you talk to the coaches about what makes a good penalty killer, our coaches frequently will talk about being able to read the play, being a smart hockey player, and Tremblay, I think, exemplifies that, and he's had a very good series, a very good playoff run so far through the 5 games, both at even strength and on the penalty kill.
We always get a lot of emails asking about specific players, so I'm just going to run through the list here, and you give me your update. Tyler Pitlick is playing more and on a more featured line, and seems to be doing a lot more offensively in the last little while. Has his play improved, or is it just the opportunity finally came knocking?
I think his play improved and his confidence improved, and you know he's got good size to begin with, but he skates like the wind. And when you combine those 2 things, you know he's been terrific down the stretch. I mean, there was a time earlier in the year when he was a healthy scratch, when he actually could be considered something of a 12th or 13th forward. I mean, as recently as when the Barons were in Calgary to play the Flames AHL affiliate in early February, he was a healthy scratch in that game. He's really come a long way in the last couple of months. He contributes almost every shift now and has really clicked well with Mark Arcabello and Hunter Tremblay, which is an interesting line. I mean, you got 3 guys that played in either college or university hockey. In Tremblay's case, the University of New Brunswick. And in Pitlick's case, you got a very high draft pick who came out of Canadian juniors most recently. So it's kind of a mixture, sort of a hybrid line. But those 3 guys have really connected well, and I think with Tremblay, it was mainly just confidence, and he's been able to convert now. He's getting better ice time, but I think it's because he was playing better.
How are the Swedes, Pajarvi and Lander, doing?
They're doing fine. Magnus had a couple of assists in the game the other night, and you know Lander has been a little bit more low profile, but that's sort of the type of player that he is. I mean, he's a steady type guy and has done well in the faceoff circle, and he's just been pretty much the Anton Lander that I think you guys saw during the course of the year. And slowly but surely, I expect him to get a few more chances down here on the power play and things like that. So far, he hasn't produced a whole lot in whatever opportunities he's had there in those non-checking line roles. But he's paired with Ryan Keller and Philippe Cornet these days, and they've been producing pretty well. So Lander and Pajarvi have been doing quite well.
One of the players that Oilers fans are probably going to get a long look at training camp in the fall up on the left side is Timo Hartikainen. Has he had a good playoff so far?
Yes, very much so. You know, statistically, he's been solid, 2 goals, 2 assists. And then again, most of the team has. I mean, 19 guys have skated in a position player role for the Barons in the first 5 games of the playoffs, and 16 of them have points. So, you know, everyone's contributed. But Timo's playing very well right now. I mean, he's a guy that, when he's handling the puck well and controlling the puck well, especially down low, he's very effective. And, you know, he's the type of guy that's big enough that at this level especially, he can really bounce off people and have guys bounce off of him. And when he braces, whether he's near the net or not. When he braces himself and prepares for a hit, usually he gets the better of it and can maintain control of the puck. So his puck control has been good, and I think he's been minimizing his mistakes, and he's done very well so far. You know, he's even through five games, and there are a few guys that are plus players. So, you know, the plus-minus statistics through the playoffs don't look that great, but everybody likes Timu. I mean, he's doing pretty well.
One of the guys that has really shown up in the box scores since the playoffs started is Dylan Yeo. He's a big part of the team's success. Some offense, a lot of penalty minutes. Where does he play on the defensive depth chart? And tell me a little bit about him as a player.
Well, you know, he was a guy that sort of kicked around the fringes of the AHL, mostly an ECHL player for a number of years, and came out of the Calgary Hitmen. He was a teammate for a while with Alex Plante there in the mid-2000s. Was a year or two ahead of Alex. But was a guy that was the ECHL Defenseman of the Year a couple of years ago, but had never really gotten a steady diet of the AHL. He was a small part of a championship team in Hershey a couple of years ago that Brian Helmer was also on, but he only played a couple of games in the playoffs. This year, the Barons signed him around Thanksgiving, U.S. Thanksgiving, to a PTO, and he wound up signing a standard contract, has been a key guy. He's a guy that does pretty well. He's not a huge guy, but he uses his size well, skates pretty well, and has a cannon for a shot. So he is able to contribute on the power play while still being good in his own end. And he's a guy that's, you know, I'd say at this level, kind of a, you know, a second pairing type guy, and you know, he's been very effective down here. He can step up into the rush if need be, but he's not just a pure offensive-type defenseman. And so he's a guy that Dave Manson, the former NHL All-Star and tough guy, is his uncle. His mom's brother is Dave Manson. He doesn't play like Manson as far as he's got some penalty minutes, but some of those were in a misconduct in the Houston series. But, you know, he doesn't play that kind of a fierce style that Manson did. He's much more of a finesse player. But, you know, he's a guy that has really been a good find for them this season.
It's an interesting blue line, and earlier this week on Jason Greger's show, Stu McGregor, Oilers' scouting director, was on, and he made a special point to talk about Alex Plante and about the fact that that you know he might be forgotten a little bit by some, but the organization hasn't forgotten about him, and he's perhaps a guy who has emerged as a possibility at the NHL level after really you know honing his skills in the American Hockey League. How has he looked this year?
He's been terrific. You know, he's had obviously the concussion problems that derailed him right after Christmas, and then he came back and he got injured in a fight in February for us. But he's had, a steadier year than he had last year. I think he's just, you know, he's a guy that has to utilize his long reach and his size and has to play the angles well because everyone knows he's not the fleetest skater, but he's done a really nice job this year. He's one of these guys that has, you know, and hopefully from the Barons' standpoint, it'll continue, but just rarely seems to get burned in visible situations, you know, where you look to him and say, oh, well, he missed his assignment or missed his man or whatever. And so he's had a very steady year. He's getting better, I think, at moving the puck and at times contributing offensively, but that's not his game. I mean, the key thing for him is to make that good first pass and then just be steady in his own end, and that's really what he's been able to do this season.
Okay, the game tonight is, what time is it where you are right now?
We are in the central time zone, so it's going on 2:15 right here in Oklahoma City right now.
Okay, so the game will be 7 o'clock your time, 6 o'clock our time tonight, right?
Correct.
Okay, so if anybody listening in Edmonton, the game is on tonight. It's accessible for Oilers fans. You go to the AHL site, find the game in the scores column, and then click on the radio tower right by Oklahoma City Barons, and you'll hear Jim. I'm looking forward to it. Is that correct, Jim?
Yes, that is correct. I will point out, however, that for Canadian listeners, that will take you. It should take you to a page on the Barons' official website, and there select that you're listening out of the United States.
Okay.
There's a different web stream available for U.S. users that's not available in Canada, and sometimes people automatically click on that, and if they're in Canada, they can't get it. So make sure that there's a page with a bunch of links on it that you choose the one that says listening outside the United States on either a computer or a mobile device, and you'll be fine.
Jim, looking forward to it. We'll be tuning in tonight, and you have a great day.
That's great. Thanks a lot.
All right. Jim Byers, Oklahoma City Barons play-by-play guy. He's very good on the radio. I don't know if you've heard him do play-by-play, but he does a very fine job. And looking forward to that tonight because I have to talk my wife into it because she'll want to watch I don't know, Breakfast at Tiffany's or Prince of Tides or My Friend Glecko. I don't know what it is, but it'll be something. I am very good at convincing her because years and years and years of practice, and I've already watched Prince of Tides. So, you know, I mean, it's not like I want to watch it again. Sorry. And if you're a big fan of that movie, I do apologize. Not likely, though. Anyway, this is Nation Radio. Kent Wilson on the way next. We're brought to you by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 1:21. We're around until 2 o'clock today, and then it's Jungle Jim Hunter at 2 until 4 o'clock, and then my good friend Jeff Crichel joins us between 4 and 5 with the Crush Health Show. Lots of news in hockey today. Mike Green scoring late to give Washington a 3-2 win over the New York Rangers, and now that series is tied at 2 apiece in the bizarro playoff year of 2012. The Flyers and New Jersey play tomorrow, and New Jersey is up 2-1. And in the West, it's just ridiculous. Phoenix is playing very, very well, and their series against Nashville, and the LA Kings have St. Louis on the ropes. So we're just imagining. Actually, Mark mentioned a minute ago about the fact that, you know, Phoenix, their parade could be through downtown Phoenix and then to the airport where they fly immediately to Quebec City. I mean, is this some kind of strange story that's being written this year? But that's basically it. It's an upside down kind of a deal. And New York is the team that I would think would be the favorite now to come out of the East. But with their loss today, you know, that's up in the air too. And maybe the ultimate story of this year in the National Hockey League in the playoffs is Washington is winning by cutting back on Ovechkin's playing time and playing him very little. And I think most people would agree that, you know, offensively at least, he's been their best player for a number of years. This year may be different, and I just thought that solving Alex Ovechkin's problem would involve more than just not actually playing him, but there you go. Canada losers today in overtime, a very close game, 5-4. Jack Johnson scored for the Americans. It was his second goal of the game at 1:47 into overtime as the Americans edged Canada 5-4. And word today that the Nashville Predators may be adding Barry Trotz saying that there's a high probability that Alexander Radulov and Andrei Kostitsyn will be back in the lineup for Monday's game. So that's the craziness we've got going on in the National Hockey League right now. Joined by Kent Wilson, the nation's overlord, to talk about Flames, Oilers, Canucks, and a lot of stories going on this week. How are you in snow country there, Kent?
Well, it's starting to rain now, so maybe it'll wash it away, so not too bad.
Well, I never feel too bad for you guys because I know in the middle of winter those Chinooks take care of everything, so I'm sure you're about 20 minutes away from good weather. So
yeah, it's supposed to be 21 on Tuesday, so can't complain.
Yeah, I always curse you guys anyway weather-wise, so we're not going to talk about that too much. Flames made some news this week. A really smart, intelligent bet, signing centerman Roman Cervenka. Tell me a little bit about it and the reaction from fans.
Initially, everyone was pretty surprised. I mean, it sort of came out of left field. It's definitely not a move the organization would have made a couple years ago under Daryl Sutter, so it's not something we're used to. And the cap hit that was reported seemed initially pretty high, but then when you learn that most of it is bonuses, it makes a lot more sense. So generally, I think fans are pleased with the move.
And does this imply that somebody like Jokinen may not be back, or is this just a move that has been made and we should disregard it? You know, it's outside the idea of the top four or five forwards.
I think it does imply that the team is at least not fully committed to re-signing Jokinen. It's given them another option and perhaps leverage if Jokinen comes back to them and says he wants, you know, 4 or 5 years at $4 or $5 million. They can say, well, we can go somewhere else now.
You know, the situation with Calgary up front is so interesting, but you wrote an item on Flames Nation that isn't about the forwards, it's about goaltending and the possibility of trading Kiprusoff. Is that going to be a major story here this summer, even just the possibility of trading him?
Yeah, I think it's going to be, I mean, that and Jerome again, everyone's kind of waiting to see what the team's going to do and if it's finally going to cash in on these guys. Ginla's in his last season of his contract. Kiprusoff has 2 more years. The team hasn't made the playoffs in 3 seasons. So it's people are really interested to see what the team's going to do, if it's going to cash in these sort of assets before they either retire or aren't worth as much. So it's definitely an item of concern. I've had, I think, two or three articles on it already at the site.
Is it it might be a good summer for them to offload Kiprasov, because there's teams that need it, not a huge number, and Luongo's out there, and Tim Thomas might be, and compared to that, Kiprasov's contract may be a positive, right?
Yeah, that's for sure. And I think there's only maybe two unrestricted free agents that might be considered potential starters, and Thomas Vokoun and Josh Harding. And then after that, it's a whole lot of backup. So if anyone's looking for a starter, but they don't want to spend, you know, a lot of money, especially over a lot of years, Kiprasov could be a, sort of an in-between option.
I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about the NHL coaching situations overall, because it's getting really interesting. And we'll start with what happened in San Jose this week, which the GM got a major, you know, thumbs up, and were on side, and it was crickets when it came to the coach. That doesn't bode well for Todd McLellan.
No, it doesn't seem like it. And then you're hearing some things out of Vancouver that maybe Alain Vigneault might be out there. So that's two really, really good bench bosses in my view that might be available this offseason, which is good news, I think, for the Flames, because they're looking for a coach.
I just can't believe Vigneault would be leaving Vancouver. It doesn't make sense to me. Although
no.
I know that the story is out there, but McLellan might be a good match for a team like Calgary. He's had some success in the postseason. They don't plan to do a complete rebuild, and you know, restructuring doesn't look like a rebuild. He'd be an attractive guy for Calgary.
Oh, for sure. I've had a lot of respect from since he landed in San Jose. And, you know, they've always had good underlying numbers. This year they were sort of bitten with really bad percentages, and it sort of carried through into the playoffs. So I think if San Jose shoots even mediocre shooting percentage this year, we're probably still talking about them. They've always been a good team under him, so I would have no problems if the Flames looked into him if he was available.
We hear rumors in Edmonton about Oiler, you know, coaching possibilities, McLellan being one of them, and then Sutter coaching the World Hockey Championships for Canada. Are there any names that have popped out in Calgary media or that you have heard with regard to the Flames?
We've been mulling over a lot of options in Calgary. Troy Ward is a guy who gets actually a lot of attention right now. He's the head coach of the Abbotsford Heat, and they had a very excellent season under him, even though, you know, they were frequently decimated by the Flames calling up all of their players because of all the injuries the parent club had, and now they're having a really good playoff run. And in addition to that, when you talk to a lot of the players he coaches, they gush about him. So that's a couple of good arrows pointing in the right direction for him.
The Abbotsford team, do they have a lot of guys who, I'm always surprised, Calgary actually has done a pretty good job developing players over the last couple of years, especially defensemen. Are there any candidates down in Abbotsford who you might see moving up to the big club along with the coach, if that happens?
Right now, not really. I mean, there's Leland Irving, who probably will press for the backup role next year, even if Kiprasov is traded. I don't think he's ready to be a starter. There's some guys who you could probably call up for an injury, but, I mean, the best player on the team this year was Chris Kalanos, who is a 30-year-old, probably AHL lifer. So there's still not a lot of high-end guys you could hope to see on the Flames next year and would make any kind of difference.
This is Nation Radio. We're in conversation with Kent Wilson, the nation's overlord of all the nation sites. Let's talk a little bit about the draft. Edmonton has the number one pick, and you're an advanced stats guy, so I'm going to throw a question that maybe isn't in your ballpark, but you can catch a cab to get to it. Edmonton holding the first pick. There's a consensus number one in Nail Yakupov. Math likes him, suggests that he'd, you know, be a 40-point guy somewhere in there.
Yep.
Is there any way, in your opinion, for a defenseman, especially a player who has a lot of his value defensively, to cover the same kind of bet that a Yakupov would be capable of offensively?
I don't think so, especially not in the short term, say 2 to 3 years out. Defensemen usually take a bit longer to develop, and because of that, they're harder to read, they're a harder bet. I mean, it's hard to say what a guy is going to be like at 25 when he's 18 years old. So forwards usually have a more immediate impact, and offense is one of the most expensive things to buy on the market. So if you're talking about a defensive defenseman especially, I take the forward pretty much every time.
Now, Flames fans, are they into the draft yet, or is it so difficult because of where they draft to really get an idea about who might be available?
Probably not as much as Edmonton fans, but last year I think they learned to get excited after Sven Berchi was drafted, and he's torn it up ever since, so it's starting to build now.
Have you watched any of the WHL playoffs? Berchi's been outstanding. He scored a massive goal, the 3-0 goal. He just a bullet shot last night. Crazy play.
No, I haven't caught any games, but I do. I look up the highlights whenever I can.
Yeah, your goalie, a Flames draft pick, is just shooting lights out for the Oil Kings too. So I'm sure there's a few Flames fans who are checking it out. Wanted to ask you finally, Ken, about the. You wrote a great article this week on Flames Nation, Asking the Right Questions, Content Over Style. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about what the article talks about. We recommend people go read it, but tell me just the overview or the thumbnail sketch of the article.
Well, it's just something I've thought about the last few years. When you get into debates with friends, be it on the internet or elsewhere, you start to get lost in the categorization of players, meaning, I guess based on physical qualities, too. Or tools. So you'll hear, you know, a team needs more toughness, or a team needs more speed, and it gets to the point where people stop asking if a guy can play hockey. It's more about the physical tools that you can list off in a scouting report. And I think the first question anyone should always ever ask is, how good is this guy at actually playing hockey? I think I use toughness in the article itself as an example, and I think for me, toughness for the sake of toughness, even on a fourth line, is dumb. I think you should always go for how good is the guy and then, you know, build from there.
It's interesting you mention that, because one of the best fourth lines in hockey right now is the Phoenix fourth line, which is cobbled together with rejects and thrown away items, and yet they've been pretty effective here in the playoffs. None of them appears to be a knuckle dragger or somebody who's capable of lifting up a semi-trailer, but they're good hockey players, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think this really crystallized itself a couple of years ago for me. The Flames had Nigel Dawes coming off of a 15-goal season for the team. He had played in both a sort of a second and third line role during the year, and they bought him out. And then they signed Rytus Evanens, and that was just nonsense to me. I couldn't believe that they'd bought out a guy who could, you know, score 10 to 15 goals in a support role, and replaced him with basically one of the worst hockey players in the league. I mean, Evanens is a, you know, capable fighter, I'm sure, but when it comes to actually playing hockey, he was definitely not much of an asset. So it's those type of moves that I just can't get behind at all.
One of the things that I thought about when I read your article was, how many organizations give up on a player, and that fourth line in Phoenix is an example of it, where there's some guys who were cast aside, and it's a difficult thing to learn how to be a hockey player at the National Hockey League level. And so when you offload a guy after his entry-level deal, maybe you sign him to two more years, he's 25, 26, and now you're looking at younger candidates. The Oilers certainly have done this over the years with several players. Dan Cleary would be an obvious example, but there are others. Kyle Brodziak was traded for draft picks. Sometimes you give up on a player as an organization just as they develop the skills to actually be able to play hockey at the NHL level.
Yeah, my fear is that might happen to Michael Backlund here in Calgary, and I think part of it is expectations coming out of the draft. You know, guys expected to score, comes into the league, he doesn't score at a rate people expect, and then they sort of move him along because he's disappointing. Well, I mean, Backlund this year didn't have a very good year in terms of counting stats, but this was the first season that he drove the play against anyone but fourth liners, which is a pretty good season to have as a 22, 23-year-old centerman. And if you move a guy like that before he's 25, 26, you can really miss out on some good seasons.
The other thing that irritates me about this subject is people will often say, use an example of Linus Omark, who I've suggested is a player that you know, another team might look at. The Oilers obviously don't have an interest in him. But people will use as proof, if he goes back to the Swedish Elite League or the KHL, well, see, he couldn't make it. But there's a lot of capable guys playing in those leagues who could play in the National Hockey League, right? They haven't had the opportunity, or the timing wasn't right, but they're good hockey players.
Yeah, and there's probably guys like that in the AHL too, but they just don't fit into a certain pigeonhole for a third or fourth line player, and they can't quite score at a top six rate, but they can probably outscore, you know, other third and fourth liners, but they don't get the chance because they're not, you know, 6'2", and they don't weigh 220, and they don't bang bodies.
And just to wrap this up, and then we'll move on to the next subject, but I think the team that epitomizes what we've talked about here, player versus, you know, whatever description you can put on him, is the Detroit Red Wings. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, they just seem to look for guys who are useful, and they plug them into the roster and see how it goes.
Yeah. It's the Daniel Cleary story where he was invited basically with no promises at all. Show up with your equipment and we'll see how it goes. And he's still there and won some cups and is making a fine living doing what he loves to do. What have you got coming up on the Nations, Kent, that we can look forward to this week?
Well, mainly we might be rolling out something pretty major for NHL numbers. I can't really give too many details for it yet, but we're hoping that's going to have a launch starting this week, and it's not new functionality, it's probably content, and we're adding some new authors most of your listeners are going to be probably aware of, and once that gets going, I think we'll have some of them on the show.
Well, you know what, that's good. I'll look forward to that. So maybe we'll have you on next week on the show to kind of launch that for us. Would you do that?
Yeah, sure. Sounds
all right,
good.
Well, we've got one guy signed up for next week. Kent, thanks so much, man. I appreciate it.
Talk to you later, Alan.
All right. That's Kent Wilson from the Nation sites, and you can check him out. Does great writing for the Flames Nation site, but he also does across-the-board stuff, especially with regard to advanced stats, or at least that's what I really enjoy reading about Kent. He makes it readable, and I can understand it. And that article that I mentioned on the Flames Nation site about content over style, very, very interesting. And it really, I think, does speak to why the Detroit Red Wings are an organization that always seems to be, you know, picking up other people's strays and have them turned into thoroughbreds. I don't know how they do it, but you know they do, and somebody might want to copy it who's a National Hockey League manager or general manager. Just saying, you know, don't want to tell people what to do. This is Nation Radio. Benjamin Massey on the way, and we're brought to you by Edmonton Motors. We're back after this.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 1:44, 16 minutes before 2 o'clock. Jungle Jim Hunter on the radio at 2 o'clock this afternoon. And this texted to us at 10:12:60. Can you settle the debate? Who wanted to stay the course and who wanted to blow it up? Feaster versus Sutter. The word we got, and this is, I'm not sure, you know, this is, you know, probably 90th hand, was that Sutter was the one who wanted to do the rebuild, and Feaster, or at least Feaster and above, were not interested in doing a rebuild. So that's what we heard. That's what we got. Now, whether or not that, sometimes these things have a way of working themselves out conveniently. And I know that Sutter, after he had left the organization, had mentioned something that along those lines at his press conference, which is, you know, sometimes convenient. But that's the word. That's the rumor that we got. And I apologize to you for not getting to that question while Kent was with us. But maybe we'll discuss it with him when we talk next week. A couple of things to update you on. Washington Capitals were winners. Mike Green scoring late and scoring the winner as the Caps defeated the New York Rangers 3-2. And that series is now tied at 2-2 in the bizarro Stanley Cup playoffs that we have going on right now. New Jersey up 2-1 over Philadelphia. They'll play game number 4 tomorrow. And in the West, it's just crazy wild. LA up 3-0 over St. Louis. And, of course, we've got the other one is to Phoenix over Nashville 3-1. So I don't know who's going to win the Stanley Cup, but chances are it's going to be, if I had to put money on it right now, which I don't gamble because I'm cheap, I'd go Los Angeles. That's just my feeling. Joined now by Benjamin Massey from Copper and Blue and also 86 Forever. How are you, sir?
I'm not too bad. How about yourself?
Good. You know, it's great to talk to you finally because I've known you as Lord Bob for 1,000 years now, and it's just great to have a conversation with you over the telephone. So,
yeah, people can realize I actually exist now.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and you're not really diabolical. You just are on Twitter, right?
Yeah, pretty much, you know. When you got 140 characters, you got to shout a little bit to make yourself heard.
Well, you do an excellent job. Now, you're an Edmonton native living in Vancouver, but you remain a true Copper and Blue Oiler fan, correct?
That's right. The easiest way to make sure you stay an Oilers fan forever is to surround yourself with Canucks fans, I find.
Yeah, that would probably be it. But you're also a Vancouver Whitecaps fan, but you're following the FC Edmonton situation, too.
That's right. Back in the old days, I was cheering for the Edmonton Aviators when I was a kid. And obviously, they went belly up in a real hurry.
Yep.
So I moved to Vancouver. I got into the Whitecaps. And then Edmonton got this new soccer team. So I'm like, well, what am I going to do now?
Cheer for both, right?
Yep, I'm kind of a bit of a bigamist on that one.
Did you get out to the FC Whitecap game at Commonwealth this week?
I did. I did manage to see that one. It was a bit of a disappointment from an Edmonton perspective. But the Edmonton played pretty well, given that no one gave them much of a chance. They just couldn't finish the deal.
Well, you know what? It seems like there's a little bit of maturation going on. The team has to gel a little bit, right?
That's for sure. Most of those players are under 25, and a lot of them have been playing together for a couple seasons now. But when you have a few small players and they're all fairly young, as we're seeing with the Oilers, all the skill in the world can't replace maturity.
Yeah, and with the Whitecaps, they didn't bring their full lineup, but they're still a skilled bunch, and they've got that their seasoned group.
Yeah, they didn't bring their full lineup, but there were still a lot of experienced players. They only had a couple real rookies in there. Eric Ostley, the guy who scored the winning goal, he's a designated player making $1 million a year. The other guy, goal scorer, Atiba Harris, he's been in Major League Soccer since before I was watching it. So you can't underestimate the amount of experience they had.
Yeah, for sure. Now, the return match is in Vancouver coming up, right?
That's right, coming up this Wednesday.
Okay, sounds good. And you'll be reporting on that on 86 Forever?
Absolutely. I would not miss that one for the world.
So you've got a pretty good gig going on with SB Nation, which is a great site. They're obviously Copper and Blue, you write for hockey, and then you're doing your soccer thing over there at 86 Forever.
Yeah, that's right. It's a decent scam. I only got into the soccer thing because I was already writing for Copper and Blue. When I started up, there wasn't that many in the way of MLS blogs on SB Nation. There was Sounder at Heart and a couple others, and the Whitecaps weren't even in Major League Soccer yet, but I sent an email to the guy, hey, how'd you like a Whitecaps blog that four people are going to read? And he said, sure. And everything just kind of exploded on me from there.
So just for those who have followed you and those who maybe have forgotten where you came from originally, you were the South Smithsonian Roller Gator, right?
That's right. Way back in the olden days of 2008,
yeah.
I was the South Smithsonian Roller Gator, and just once a week or something, I'd come on and throw out some expletive-laced rant. And from there, it just, every so often, I'd get an email, hey, why don't...
We lost him. We're going to get Ben back because we wanted to talk to him a little bit about the Oilers. But anyway, he great writer, very fine writer. If you catch him on Copper and Blue, my favorite thing that he does at CNB is pre or post games on the Oilers, because he's very creative with words, and some of the words we would never use on radio, but he gets them out there and in the right order. And I've had more than a few chuckles with Benjamin Massey at Copper and Blue over the while. He did mention the FC. They're playing tomorrow, by the way, at Clark Park at 2 o'clock against the Carolina Railhawks. So if you if you're in town, you want to check them out. 2 o'clock at Clark Park, going to be another great game. The FC are a very interesting team. They're as he mentioned against the Whitecaps, they had a couple of chances, 2-0 the final score for Vancouver, but an interesting team, and they are gelling and coming together. And they got a big point on the road, and I have a feeling that they're going to do pretty well tomorrow afternoon against the Carolina Railhawks. You make sure you check it out. And of course, we'll have that game for you on Team 1260. Did want to talk about, if we had a chance to, it looks like we got a little bit of a window here, about the top 10 in the draft. You can go to the Low Tide site and check out the various top 10s. Bob McKenzie's list is the list, the one that you want to check out. The reason is he's the guy who talks to scouts. And so his list is probably closer than anybody's over the years. I think he's 26, 28 out of 30. That's his, average for his final top 30. The reason he does that is he talks to the scouts, and he has a really good idea about not only where they're going to go, but, each player, and where the fact that they're going to be among the top 30. And his top 10 right now is Yakupov, Grigorenko, Ryan Murray, Philip Forsberg, Matt Dumba, Galchenyuk, Truba, Griffin Reinhardt, Morgan Riley, and then a tie at 10 between Radek Faksa and Teuvo Teravainen, who's really moving up the charts right now. So there'll be a lot of movement, as I mentioned earlier, mostly because the combine will expose things like injury. Most of these kids in the top 10 have had pretty devastating injuries. Galchenyuk missed basically the whole season. Yakupov had a huge knee injury that impacted him in a big way. The problem there is, he just wasn't wasn't as effective when he came back. So if you're an NHL team and you're thinking about drafting him, say, you know, I don't know, number one overall, you really want to go into that, you know, the combine and afterwards and have a really good idea that this kid is going to be able to, you know, be 100% healthy. Now, knee injuries now aren't like when I was a kid when Bobby Orr got a knee injury just about every, you know, every year. These kids can recover very quickly. So it's not like it's catastrophic. But then again, if you're taking the number one overall pick, you want to make sure he's healthy. So that's at the combine. And they also do a lot of interviews. And I don't know that the Oilers do, but I know a lot of teams put a lot of import on the interviews and on, you know, other tests that they do during that period of time. So the Bob McKenzie draft list will change quite a bit from the one that he put out, the top 10 that he put out, which was at the lottery, and the ones that we see as we go towards the actual NHL draft. And by the time he releases, I think the Monday of the NHL draft week, by the time he releases that top 30, that'll be pretty darn close to where you're actually going to see him, see these players go. And as I mentioned, he's usually like 26 out of 30 or 24 out of 30 most seasons, because he's talking to those scouts. Redline Report is also listed on the Low Tide blog, and it's, basically a 31st team. That's how Kyle Woodleaf presents it. As a matter of fact, we had, Kirk Ludicky on not long ago, and he's one of the scouts for Redline, and that's exactly how he described it. A 31st team. There's some guys who will not be anywhere on the top 10 or the top 30 that Redline releases, and they know they'll go much higher, but from their point of view, all they really want to do is give you an idea about what they see and what they like. They've got Tara Vinen, by the way, number 3 overall, and they've got Griffin Reinhart, number 9, and Ryan Murray, number 4. And then we've also got Craig Button listed there as well, and Craig has Yakupov, number 1, but then Dumba, number 2, and as of right now, Ryan Murray isn't even on the top 10 there. So there's all kinds of scales going on as far as the top 10 is concerned, and that'll continue through right until the draft. And the McKenzie one is definitely the one to pay attention to because it's the closest. So if you're a fan of the draft, you want to check that out, that's where to do it. Now, just a couple of more minutes here. We want to sum up a few things. If you have been out and about and haven't heard, the Washington Capitals were winners today. A late goal by Mike Green put them at the top and tied now at 2 apiece with the New York Rangers. No games tonight, which is, I mean, I don't know what to do. Do you have any suggestions, Mark? Young guy like you, can you suggest me, what can I do to hit the town to make the scene?
Hit the town? Well, I don't hit the town. I'm 23 years old. I haven't made a public appearance all year. I'm probably going to watch NBA playoffs tonight.
Oh, okay. Well, there's
basketball playoffs tonight,
and
yes.
Also check out Oklahoma City. The Barons are playing. That'll be on the radio. Jim Byers as well. And lacrosse tonight as well, right? The Rush playing as well. So there's lots to check out. Enjoy. Next Saturday, we'll be live on the air between noon and 2. We'll have Kent Wilson and a cast of thousands on Nation Radio. Have a great weekend, everybody. I'm out.